This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Deborah Garcia. Her film, Symphony of the Soil, is screening at the CCA in Santa Fe at 6:30 on Wednesday, the 11th of May. It's part of an event called Farms, Films, Food, a Santa Fe celebration. It starts at 5 that evening and includes food demonstrations and art and food trucks and films and all kinds of togetherness. It's presented by the CCA, the Farmers Market Institute, and the Street Food Institute. Welcome, Deborah, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I want to come to it.
I know. You're going to be there by Skype for the Q&A, right?
That's right. I'll be there by Skype.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll miss you in person, but Skype is a beautiful thing. But so how did you get interested in soil and come to make this film?
Well, I've been interested in food and food and health and food and social justice since I was in college in the late 60s and early 70s. And I became a filmmaker then, too. So I had always wanted to make a film about these topics. So I made a film called The Future of Food that was well-received and about the food system and genetic engineering and the alternatives to that regime. And so I decided to make a film on soil. I researched it and met a lot of soil scientists and got into it and ended up becoming a complete soil freak and soil nerd and made the film, which has also been well-received because I don't think there's actually soil, you know, it's not the most photogenic subject, so I, you know, figured out how to make it interesting, and so that's also been playing all over the place, and it was a really interesting challenge, and soil is, it's not something, I thought I knew about it, but once I started studying it and researching, I realized, well, it's a really vast realm.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's so fascinating about soil is that it's not one thing, and it's a fairly recently discovered world of microbes and all kinds of little, I think of them as little, like, people under the earth, and huge communities of organisms working together that actually make not only our food system, but all life on Earth.
Exactly. Yeah, it's more like an ecosystem. And it is a community, so we call it the soil community, and we're part of that soil community.
So one of the stunning facts presented in this film is that one-third of the world's arable land has been lost to soil erosion. Mm. That's a lot of soil. What happened? Where did it go? How did it happen?
Well, it got blown away or washed away with water. And a lot of that happened because people plowed and didn't really understand the effects of plowing, which breaks up those microbial communities that you're talking about, which actually hold soil together. And they expose the soil to wind and erosion and also erosion by water. And the worse that soil gets, the more you abuse soil so that it dries out and it doesn't have the life in the soil, the easier it is to erode. For example, these big floods that they have in Iowa, because a lot of the soil there has been compacted with big machinery and they use chemicals and fertilizer on it, so it's not, a lot of the soil is dried out and compacted. So when it rains, the water just washes off the soil and washes the topsoil off with it instead of sinking into the soil, which it would do if they used cover crops or, you know, had not plowed into it in the first place. So a lot of it was misunderstanding, a misunderstanding of how soil functions. And a lot of that, you know, people are using more, there's sort of a push now to use cover crops, even in industrial agriculture, and to try to figure out how to stop erosion. But it's kind of one of the things that happens with farming. You know, it's one of the things that certainly can happen with the way that most land is farmed in the United States.
When you talk about plowing has been going on since pretty much the beginning of agriculture. I mean, there's plows in the Bible. What's different? I mean, has that one-third of topsoil been lost over several millennia or like the last 100 years? What are we talking about?
Well, we actually have this history of agriculture in the film where David Montgomery talks about that. And some places actually treated their soil well and actually improved the soil. It just depends on how you treat the soil and that particular where you are. But what happens is that people started farming around the floodplains and, you know, in Mesopotamia and on the Nile. And then, you know, more people started, you know, there were more people, higher populations, and they started moving up into the hills, and they would farm the hills, and that's when erosion started because it would just wash down the hill. But I think that, that erosion is a huge problem. And, well, the Dust Bowl, that's our great example here in the United States, was people went out there and started plowing the plains and didn't really understand that that's not a good thing to do. And then they had several years of drought where the soil was dried out, and then it just blew off. I mean, there's like huge amounts of soil. In fact, we have the picture, this sort of very famous picture, of all that soil in a cloud actually coming over Washington, D.C., being blown to Washington, D.C., and blocking out the sun. And it was so shocking that that's actually when Congress passed some laws that encouraged the conservation of soil. That's where our conservation system and our, you know, the part of our government that encourages conservation came into existence was because of the Dust Bowl and those practices.
Yeah, there's a story about how somebody on the floor of Congress was talking about this and their fellow Congress members were kind of falling asleep and somebody whispers in his ear, talk for a few more minutes, because they knew the cloud was coming.
Right. They set it up that way in order to really shake up the Congress. And that was, you know, obviously a very good thing.
Yeah. And it does underscore the fact that we don't tend to make changes until a huge crisis is upon us, whether
right.
It's a great cloud of dust or something else.
Right. Well, certainly there are a lot of changes happening in the United States on a grassroots level, but, you know, as we know, it's really hard to get anything all that beneficial through the Congress.
Right. Right. Well, so let's talk about that. I mean, there's people doing all kinds of things to regenerate soil, and when you talk to an ordinary person who's not involved in agriculture, but an ordinary educated person about soil erosion, in my experience, they'll shake their heads and say, yeah, it's terrible. It'll take thousands of years for that soil to regenerate once it's lost. Is that true?
Well, it depends. You can actually rebuild soil. There are some people like Fred Kirschenman, who's in the film. He says that if you treat soil right, you can actually regenerate it in 3 years.
Yeah.
And you can also rebuild soil using certain techniques, using composting and, you know, and also using cover crops where you actually plow those cover crops back into the soil so that you're feeding those microorganisms that build the soil. So it depends on where you are. There's some places where it takes, you know, thousands and thousands of years to build a little bit of soil. But there's other places that are more humid that soil can build more quickly. But we can actually build soil. People do build soil. But it takes, you know, you have to know what you're doing, and you also have to be willing to give back to the soil instead of take, because soil, you know, there's this whole idea of Sir Albert Howard, who was a British agronomist, this law of return, where in nature a leaf falls from a tree and falls onto the ground, and then the leaf decomposes and is being eaten by all those microbes in the soil. It feeds the soil. And it starts becoming part of this whole system of the soil, and that's the law of return. So it returns to the soil, and then the plants, those nutrients break down. The plants use those nutrients to grow, and you have this wonderful cycle. When you have agriculture, you're actually taking that away from the land. You're not returning it to the soil or taking off to market. People are eating it, and so you're actually depleting the soil. Agriculture depletes the soil just by its very nature. So good agriculture gives back to the soil, and that's why good farmers put compost on their soil. They use cover crops. They often use crop rotation. And all those things are good for all kinds of reasons, including that they prevent disease. But this whole idea of giving back to the soil and not taking from the soil, because more you take and take and take, the less vitality the soil has, because all those microbes that you were talking about earlier, all those organisms that feed off the soil, and then the organisms that feed off those organisms all the way up, there's less and less and less. And so it's a downward spiral. And once that happens, and there's a certain point, you know, we can rebuild soil, but there's a certain point when soil dies, I mean literally it's dead, then it, you know, it's hard to rebuild. And there's also a problem with salinization, because it's just by its very nature, when you irrigate, often and then it, that water leaves salts in the soil, and so that soil becomes damaged, and you can't grow plants in it because it's got all kinds of salts in it. So there's all kinds of, and also the chemicals, you know, putting chemicals in soil. That, I think that to me is the most problematic thing, is aside from genetic engineering, is that by putting chemicals in the soil, they actually, they can stay there. There's even in the valley, San Joaquin Valley here in California, there's places where there's still DDT in the soil, even though it was banned decades ago. So this idea that we need to put chemicals in the soil, that we need that for agriculture, which we know now isn't true. I mean, I personally think if a farmer has to spray his crop once to save it, you know, I'm not against that. But this regime that we have now, that's exacerbated by genetic engineering, where the plants are really they are meant to be sprayed. They will withstand being sprayed with a poison. So then they spray and spray and spray and spray. And I think that is very troubling, because you can rebuild soil, but if there's so many toxins in the soil, you know, then there's this whole complicated process of how do you remove those from the soil? Can you plant certain plants in the soil that will pull those toxins out? So, and those, I personally think, and a lot of people think this, that those have had those chemicals have had a negative impact on our health.
We're talking to Deborah Garcia about her film Symphony of the Soil. It's funny because, I mean, I remember as a child reading about a great act of war in ancient, I don't even know if it was Rome, but the victors salted the soils of the defeated,
right,
so that they couldn't grow and so they couldn't grow crops. We're doing essentially that to ourselves,
right,
whether it be through the kind of salinization that occurs that you were talking about, or the killing of the soil through chemistry, through pesticides, herbicides, synthetic fertilizers, which, I mean, there is some ambivalence about synthetic fertilizers, and the argument is continually made that they did save a lot of lives at a point where there was an impending famine in India and crop yields went up when synthetic fertilizers were put on them. But tell us more about what synthetic fertilizers have done to the world.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, that synthetic fertilizer is basically a product of war, because nitrogen, and we go into this in the film, the whole thing of the nitrogen cycle. Nitrogen, you know, like 80% of the air around us is nitrogen. It's very, very stable. In order to break that nitrogen into a state where it can be utilized by plants, there's two ways you can do it. One way is that plants do it naturally by these, it's kind of like these bacteria that break the nitrogen down and make it available to the plant, and the other way is to explode it. And so when they created bombs, when they made these bombs in World War I and then on into World War II, one of the things that they realized was that they could use that same technology to make this fertilizer that made plants grow. And so they switched over the plants that made bombs into plants that made fertilizer, because it was a really good industry. And it does make plants grow, but it's much harder on the soil. And then so the Green Revolution, I love this idea. I think it's so fascinating. So if you put synthetic fertilizer on regular, say, grain plants, it grows too much. It's sort of like giving it steroids. It grows too much, and the plants grow too high so that they fall over, they lodge, and then they rot because they, you know, they're on the ground. So the Green Revolution, what they did was they took dwarf plants and they fed them fertilizer so they grew to an appropriate length, appropriate size. And then they also, because they had the fertilizer, they had more grains in them. So you sort of deformed the natural process. You take dwarfs and add a chemical and make them look normal. So I love that. It's that idea.
Yeah.
So basically, and you know, the whole idea that the Green Revolution saved the world, I mean, that's very, very controversial when you really look at the political construct in India that was happening at that time and why people were starving. Because a lot of these countries could feed themselves, but once they were colonialized and so their food was being taken away from them or their fields that they grew food in. They had to grow cotton, which was taken out of the country. You know, it's much more complicated than, you know, we came in and saved the world with our fertilizer. And the other thing is, and this is also very controversial, is a woman, a scientist, who's her field is she studies nitrogen, and she's, you know, very accomplished and everything. We were talking about this, and she said, well, you know, if we didn't have fertilizer, we would have 3 billion less people. And I said, not a bad idea, you know. Yeah. But so it's, you know, it's all these things, you know, overpopulation, feeding the world, and now, you know, and in these third world countries where we, you know, the whole idea of genetically engineered corn with lots of nutrients in it so we can feed them that, well, shouldn't they really have a healthy diet? You know, shouldn't they be able to grow the plants that those communities grew for thousands of years, the pulses and the different greens and things like this that actually create a balanced diet? So you take their ability to create a balanced diet, a healthy diet, away from them, and then we come in and get to save them by giving them, you know, Monsanto's corn. And that's all they get to eat is genetically engineered corn, which, you know, has actually been proven to not be so healthy for animals. So it's a very complicated issue. But I think the interesting side of this is that people, you know, all over the world now are sort of reclaiming this right to grow healthy food that create healthy people and, you know, and healthy communities. And that is, you know, there's a real sort of battle going on now between this big takeover bully of industrial agriculture and patented, you know, chemically, genetically engineered seeds that are meant to be sprayed with chemicals or create poisons themselves with BT, and the alternative to it, you know, which is people feeding themselves and their communities versus, you know, paying enormous fees for expensive seeds from a corporation that, you know, right, buy the chemicals too. So and the soil is the battleground. The soil is the battleground for it all.
There's a kind of myth about agriculture that, yeah, organic agriculture might be healthier, but it's less productive, it's more expensive, it's only available to the elite than so-called conventional agriculture. What's the truth of that?
You know, it's so funny because I was in college in the late 60s, so I'm that sort of back to the land hippie generation. And organic food back then was hippie food. There's actually a guy writing a book called Hippie Food that I talked to recently. And you know, it was beans and rice and vegetables. It was really simple food. It was actually peasant food back then. It wasn't, you know, snobby Berkeley food. But, you know, it is the fastest growing part of the food industry. And it's actually, you know, farmers, food, you know, McDonald's is cheap because it's subsidized by our tax dollars. This whole idea of the true cost of food is something that is a really important issue that people are studying now. Like, what are the costs of chemical agriculture in terms of dead zones and, you know, destroying the soil and the health problems, all these kinds of things? That's very, very expensive. But it's subsidized. So, and there have been study after study. There have been study by the UN. There have been studies by University of Michigan, all kinds of studies that organic can feed the world. And we have some of those studies. We have talk about a little bit about those studies in the film. So I think organic can feed the world, or sustainable, or less, using less chemicals. And there have also been studies now, and a lot of farmers that do use chemicals that are sort of that kind of farmer, you know, they're learning that they've been using way more nitrogen fertilizer than they need to. And a lot of farmers now, even farmers that are, you know, big industrial farmers, are using cover crops to return nitrogen to the soil, because then they have, you know, less, you know, it costs less for the fertilizer, and it actually helps repair their soil. So I know the world could feed itself organically. I mean, we can't, you know, it's, you know, the whole thing of meat. I personally don't eat meat. I haven't had meat in, you know, since 1970. But, you know, when you really study the food system, we all should be eating more vegetables and more, you know, we should be eating less animal products for all kinds of reasons. But organic can feed the world, and sustainable can feed the world, or agroecological, or whatever it is. And not only that, but it's much better for people's health, and it's much better for people's communities.
I think there's another piece of that which doesn't get talked about as much, which is that chemical-based agriculture ultimately cannot feed the world. I mean, the idea that that is the norm and that we might or might not make the choice to get away from it, I'm not sure if that's true. It seems more like it's going to sooner or later wear out the soil, A, and B, it's totally petroleum-based anyway, and petroleum is not going to be with us forever.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. And so I think that it's, you know, I mean, what do they want us to be eating? Like, so remember that film Soylent Green?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, do they want us to be eating pellets, you know? So it's really, you know, it has to do with the quality of life and whether people are actually eating real meals rather than just fueling themselves with junk. And there's, yeah, I think that that's true. I think that, you know, it's kind of like this whole movement now of people just sort of going back to the land again and appreciating what goes on in the land and farmers markets and all these things. You look at, you know, can get depressed about the state of the world, but you look at how much change has happened in just 10 years in terms of our food system. And it has nothing to do with the government or the authorities or the corporate world. It has to do with people saying, I want to go to the farmers market. I would rather go to the farmers market, meet the farmer, see my friends and my community, and have a wonderful morning, you know, then go in some giant build, you know, air-conditioned building with fluorescent lights and get this food that's, you know, 2 weeks old. So I think you're right. I think that we could probably feed the world using all these chemical techniques, but do we want that world? Is that the world we want, you know?
Well, and how long can we do that?
Well, we can't do it for very long because I think what will happen, you know, if that's the way we go, is we talk, you know, the original thing about erosion. We're going to damage the soil so much that you know, it'll just be, you know, more and more problematic what we do to our bodies and what we do to our land. And we don't need to do it. And this, you know, the other thing is people are so worried about the world starving. There's actually more obese people in the world than there are starving people. You know, that's more of a problem. Obesity is more of a problem than starvation. And in the United States, we waste like 40% of our food. We waste. So, you know, this idea that we have to have this, you know, industrial, chemical, genetically engineered agriculture, or else everybody's going to die, you know, it's just ludicrous. It's just fear-based. And the other issue of, you know, this, you know, oil-based agriculture is do we really want our food supply and our seed supply to be controlled by a few multinational corporations? I don't. You know, I don't. So I think that, you know, this idea of moving towards a healthier food system where we treat the soil better, where we give back to the soil and we don't poison the soil and we grow the right plant in the right place and, you know, cover crops and crop rotation, all these sorts of things, you know, that will sustain us. And not only that, but it's a better life. It's a better life for all kinds of people because you have more jobs, because you have people in the community, you know, who are able to do all these things and sort of keep the food system in the community like you're all doing in Santa Fe. I mean, Santa Fe and Albuquerque has a totally happening food system now that is growing and, you know, more farmers are coming into it. I mean, that's a great example of a place where people are moving towards a healthy future, and it's great, moving away from this sort of dead zone, this kind of agriculture as a giant dead zone. And, you know, like chemical, you know, fertilizers, that's why we have this dead zone in the Gulf and these dead zones all over the world. I mean, it's killing all kinds of things, including the ocean.
Local community-based agriculture is, at this point, a still small part of our food system, and it remains that huge amounts of our food, you know, the almonds that I particularly love and eat every day, and a lot of vegetables, come from California. Corn and commodity products come from the Midwest. Given, like, let's say we say chemical-based agriculture is unsustainable, What's next for those vast miles of farmland that are being used in the kind of more industrial agricultural way right now? And, you know, like, I can't quite imagine Dallas and Houston being able to feed themselves through farmers markets. I mean, what does the transition look like?
You know, the thing is, you know, most of this, the stuff that's grown in the middle of the country or most fertile soil, the mollisols, you know, that corn doesn't feed people. It feeds cows and cars. It doesn't feed anybody.
Right.
You can say, okay, the cows feed people. But, you know, the whole, if you go into how much, you know, how much water, for example, it takes to create one hamburger, you know. So the idea that we need to do all that to feed people, it's actually not feeding people.
No, but California.
Well, California, I mean, the reality is, as far as local foods go, I mean, I agree. I love almonds. I live in California. I live in the Bay Area. So I feel like I eat the best food in the world. And it's not expensive food. It's just that we can grow food year-round here, and we can grow these wonderful almonds and all these kinds of things. So we can't have everything be totally local, but that means I can never eat chocolate again, because I'm not going to do that. I'm not giving up my chocolate or my coffee. So, but I do think that it's possible for people to start regenerating this idea of farming and having small farms around cities that feed cities, instead of shipping stuff from thousands of miles away, and even using greenhouses. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, there were several years ago, someone pointed out these vestiges of greenhouses that used to be heated in the winter, and they grew vegetables there that fed people in Cambridge. So there's all kinds of techniques that we could use and regenerate in order to do that. And, you know, Whole Foods, people come down on Whole Foods and call it Whole Paycheck, but I really like Whole Foods because, you know, they do sell healthy food, and they have allowed a lot of farmers to thrive and have markets. And they're big players, you know, they are big players. And because of Whole Foods, you know, and because of the people who shop there, and, you know, it's not a health food store. It's like I'm going in there. At some point I realized, this is not a health food store. This is a market, because I'm kind of like a health food store person. But they've given that industry teeth, you know. And so all these other stores now, I mean, Costco is hugely committed to organic. They buy from people I know, hugely committed. Walmart is committed to organic. You know, this is what's happening, and that's what people want. I mean, I've been to these conferences at a conference a few weeks ago where they were, you know, people were talking about this, and they had representatives from these different companies. And, you know, people want healthy food. They want organic, and there's a demand there. And so I think that, you know, it's possible that we could change, you know, some countries in Europe. I think Germany has a real commitment to being 50%. You know, they want to be a certain percentage organic, so that it is happening. It is possible, and I think that people will be able to feed themselves very well. And then the issue of what can be grown locally, when can it be grown? You know, when do you need to bring things in from other places? It's something that I think each community has to think about that. So I know where I'm from, Cincinnati, where I grew up. A friend of mine saw this film I made, The Future Food, that had farmers markets at the end of it as this alternative to, you know, this industrial agriculture. And she said, you know, we don't have a farmers market. I want a farmers market. So she found a partner, and they started this farmers market in the suburb I grew up in. And, you know, she found these farmers and people that had farms, and they grew organically. And she said, I have a market. You know, I'm having a market. So they started growing for the market. Other farmers saw that was a happening market. They started growing for the market. And so all these farms have sort of regenerated themselves and found markets and sell to other places now because a couple of people decided, you know, we want to change how we eat and what we eat. And it's become the totally happening thing on weekends. And the town square closes now, and they have music there, and everybody comes, and it's like this lovely thing. And so that sort of thing is happening all over the place.
When that happens, what you have is you basically bypass the whole commodity food system. You've got farmers growing food, bringing it to market, and people buying it. It's a direct farm to consumer system.
Right.
Do you envision a system where the entire industrial food system ceases to exist?
Well, you know, not everybody can go to farmers markets, but what they do have, and there's a really good example, in fact, Santa Fe and Albuquerque are a really good example of it. They have these things called food hubs where people bring, you know, there's people who organize the food hub, and people come, farmers can bring their products to that food hub, and people can come to that food hub, whether it's Whole Foods or Costco or some smaller market, and they come to that food hub and take what they want. So it actually, you know, I don't think you can have CSAs, you know, where you have that the farmer delivers directly to the household. That's another alternative to this. But this idea of food hubs where you can have small farms that can grow crops and make a living doing it, but they, you know, they don't want to drive for 8 hours to the nearest, you know, big whatever distribution center, so they cluster these food hubs, and that's a really happening thing, and it's a thing that a lot of people are interested in now, and a lot of communities are studying how to do it, and that's something that you all have there that's been quite successful, and it helps regenerate these smaller farms, and so we don't have just huge industrial farms, or you know, so you can have mid-sized farms that can actually have a market for their produce.
No, I know. I mean, these are all, and I guess what I'm wondering is, I mean, large industries that are on stock exchanges and things like that, they don't just go away. They go down, if they go down at all, kicking and screaming. And I do wonder, I mean, because I think about this a lot, I mean, is there a movement to try to make those industries healthy or just to sort of edge them out to where they are no longer players?
Well, I mean, for example, Costco. Costco has a real commitment to organic, and that's a huge company. I mean, I'm not going to stop them from doing that. I have friends that sell to Costco, that sell right. almonds, you know, organic almonds to Costco. I'm for that. I don't think big corporations are necessarily evil, you know. I mean, some of them are evil, some of them are fine, I don't know. But I think that, you know, they can't be bullying, you know, and people, I mean, or Whole Foods is a corporation. Whole Foods has, people are stockholders in Whole Foods. They a lot of farmers I know sell to Whole Foods. So I think, you know, a corporation like Monsanto, you know, do we really want a corporation buying up our seed supply, patenting those seeds, and only letting out the ones that are patented and genetically engineered that you have to, you know, that you're supposed to use with Roundup? Do I think those companies, would I like to see those companies go down? Yeah, I would like to see that company go down. You know, Monsanto is the most hated corporation in the world.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot about Monsanto in my film, The Future of Food. And yeah, I don't think their practices are good. You know, a lot of farmers want to get out underneath the thumb of Monsanto. They're dependent on them for seeds. So I think that sort of thing, you know, companies buying up seeds and hoarding them, and then when they sell them, they can sell with a really high price. You know, farmers should be able to replant their seeds, trade seeds with other farmers. You know, that there's, you know, a lot of these practices that some of these big corporations have instituted are really unhealthy for the system. But, you know, I think that you know, nobody, you know, even these farm conferences, when they have industrial farm conferences, all the farmers are really old. You know, they're like, you know, old. These, you know, organic farm conferences like EcoFarm and Moses and, you know, all these organic ones they have, they're all totally happening. You've got lots and lots of young people wanting to farm that way, really excited about farming that way, or new, you know, big, sort of new farmers, emerging farmers that have, you know, people that have had one career, but now they happen to have a family farm and they want to go back and farm that farm, women farmers. So it is, you know, that the small farm growing healthy food for communities is the most happening part of the agricultural landscape today.
The film is called Symphony of the Soil. Deborah Garcia is the filmmaker. The film is screening on Wednesday at 6:30 at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts. It's part of an event called Farms, Films, Food, a Santa Fe celebration. And it starts at 5 in the evening, and there's all kinds of great stuff going on. You can go to ccasantafe.org and find out more. Deborah will be with us for a Q&A at that event, unfortunately by Skype, not in person. But I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.